in the South End. I'm all out of luck. Well, or I could keep reading. No. Yeah, well, I think I'm so out of time that I'm not going to be able to play that song by Born Innocent that I wanted to play, because they're playing tomorrow night. But I don't even have time for that. Golly. All right, well, there's that. Well, then I'll say one more thing. Women Action and the Media Boston are hosting their annual WAM Film Festival, full of thought-provoking films and discussion, tomorrow from 1 to 10 p.m. here at MIT at the Stata Center, 32 Vassar Street. Some of this year's highlights include Someone Sang for Me, the inspiring story of a teacher who uses music education to empower at-risk youth in Springfield, Mass. Play in the Gray, a documentary about the Boston drag troupe All the King's Men. The Gloucester 18, an examination of the Gloucester Pregnancy Pact and the media spectacle around it. And Poto Mitan, a documentary about brave women activists in Haiti, and much, much more. Many of the filmmakers will be in attendance for Q&A following their films. There's a very small suggested donation, and everyone is welcome. View the full schedule at womenactionmedia.org. Now, indeed, I'm out of time. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings. Coming up next, the views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I'll be back next week. Stay free. Thank you.
مرحبا fellow earth visitors. I am currently experiencing this brief portion of my brief visit here at Music for Human. And the co-visitation is wonderful. Co-visiting with me this evening is Aurora. Marhaban, Aurora.
Namaste. Thank you for joining me in this wonderful celebration of belonging and unbelonging.
Aurora, thank you for joining with me. Aurora, of course, is a vocal therapist.
That's right.
Also joining us this evening is Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro, marhaban.
Thank you for having me on the show, as always, and thank you to all the listeners out there, of course.
I love this sentiment that you... Excuse me, Zoro. The sentiment in the beginning when you welcomed us all as fellow visitors on the earth.
Yeah. I believe this. I believe that it is a healthy attitude to have, that the experiences that we have here, our attachments must be ephemeral because they are not durable.
Well, this is a very interesting contrast to another worldview that was brought up to me this week. And this worldview was that this earth, this place that we are at, is the afterlife, that we are in heaven, that we are being rewarded for our deeds, and that when one of us dies, they're not really dying, but they are coming back to life. So death is not to be mourned. Death is to be celebrated. And we will await the return of our friends after their lifetime.
In this point of view, should we accept a tragedy that is birth, or...
See, that's an interesting point, but as my anonymous client told me, we are in such a wonderful place. When someone is born, they have died, but they have passed to somewhere better. They have passed to a place where we can fight our battles and do drugs.
See, then I must be forced, I think, to consider the possibility that there is another world out there which corresponds to hell that people are being born into from all the time. And it is possibly much like this world, but much worse. And this is a frightening possibility.
Well, it is not so much that it is worse than our world, but that there are consequences for actions. Whereas here, the consequences are more muted for people with this ideology. What is the worst that can happen if you drink rat poison? You come back to life, live it, and then return.
Mm-hmm. But more importantly, the consequences of, you know, truly the things that one can control, the consequences of having or habituating oneself to negative feelings or to hurtful attitudes may actually be durable. It's not clear, but certainly these other things are not. One's existence is not, it is guaranteed to vanish. Once amassed iPads and other things, they will disappear.
There, excuse me. So perhaps, and that is a good consequence, perhaps one's personal belongings, one's physical accumulated wealth, is not as important as their actions.
Yes, I think this is a great possibility that we should consider, regardless of if life comes precedent to now or after this.
Well, yes, so this was the natural progression of my thought. If one who believes that the afterlife is now, if you compare their actions and then consequences to one who believes that we are living now, really there is not that much of a difference. So does it really matter who is correct?
Earlier today, I heard a sentiment which was similar to this, but expressed in a very subtle way by a squirrel. It has been many years since I have heard an actual vocalization from a squirrel, and I wonder, Zoro or Aurora, have you heard this amazingly mystical experience?
I must say that I have been within the reception of the voice of the squirrel, but unfortunately I have not to any extent listened to that pronunciation, and so I cannot say that I am really familiar with the sound.
Well, I have on occasion been scolded by squirrels, and I have observed through their body language things that they must be thinking.
Precisely, precisely. And I myself have, in my life, I've had my head unceremoniously showered by nuts and pebbles that were thrown by squirrels.
Did you offend them in some way?
Presumably yes, but in a way that was not clear to me, probably because I am not sufficiently squirrel-like. Well, anyway, to our listeners, if you'd like to join us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we would love to hear your mutterings. Caller, marhaban.
Hello, marhaba, Dr. Janice, how are you?
Yes, I'm well, caller, how are you?
Doing fine, thanks a lot. Dr. Jalis, I heard that you are talking about what happened when a person die,
yes,
or the continuation of life.
Yes, and about squirrels.
Yeah, but I have something to add.
Please.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So when an infant born, the infant cry.
Yes.
And everybody around him or her laugh and congratulate the parents and congratulate everybody. Everybody happy when during this process. While when a person die, everybody cry except the person, him or herself.
Who is dying?
Or who is dead.
But caller, what happens to this person?
I think this person see the other side. I mean, it's a stage, I think, in our cycle as a creature or a human or whatever. So we went through different cycle, and one of the cycle is to go from this world to a different life, I think.
So perhaps in to mirror the birth, where the person who was born is obviously much more distressed, perhaps at the end the person who is dying or who is passing is much less distressed. And
yeah,
this This is beautiful. I love this sort of symmetry that sort of shows us that perhaps what we sense as oblivion, or what we do not remember and do not conceive of, is a much happier place than where we are at the moment.
Yeah, and that's why different religion will take different route in explaining what's going to happen and so on.
Connor, this is a beautiful idea, and one that I have heard many mystical masters speak of, saying that there is a life before birth, a pleasant life, and it is the life we return to after birth. One may ask, why is it that we do not have a clear memory of this place? And the answer that the mystics give is that we are too distracted by our current existence, and that if we are, as they are, able to cast out all of the irrelevant, what they call the mundane of our existence, if we are able to ignore it and leave only the purity of our logical or irrational being, that we will suddenly be overwhelmed with the knowledge of that life.
Yeah, it might be, or maybe
perhaps it is
from the explanation of different type of religions. I mean, like whatever you do in this life is gonna give you a reward if you are good, and it's punishment if you are not. So that will enter as a factor, and it might affect a lot of things in our thinking.
Perhaps if we were all to remember the wonder of this obviously much better presence or existence, perhaps we would all be too distraught at our current condition to actually amount to anything.
I think that one theory which I have to explain the situation is that the previous world which we may be coming from could be much dimmer, to say that this... You say the word mundane, to say that this mundane world is actually quite intense and bright when it is around you. You must be noticing it, you will be enveloped with your senses. And that the place we come from is more subdued, subtle in some way, so that you must concentrate to feel the resonances which are coming from it.
But don't you think that in us, I mean, like we have, if we take, any substance, and we go down, we reach to nucleus and we reach to the electron going in one way or the other around this very elementary particle, and there is some kind of recording, right?
Is there? I mean, isn't it lost?
Yeah, there is some recording to, I mean, like what I want to reach to is there is some kind of recording to our action. And if we do something good, we feel good. And if we do something bad, we know that this is unacceptable in our society, and if we believe in, it's not acceptable. So this is, it might be there is some kind of recording in our body, and there is a differentiation between whether we do something good and it's recorded, or we do something bad and it's recorded.
Connor, I'm not sure that it is really stored inside the body. I have a hard time believing that, because, and I'm not sure that a religious person would believe it either, because if it were in the body, a surgeon may be able to remove it or exchange this portion with another person.
Well, that would be much like altering someone's DNA. when someone has on their soul a weight of a burdened conscience, you can hear it in their voice. Mm-hmm. You can see it in the lines in their face and in their palms. Perhaps this recording is in every single cell, and so cannot be removed without ultimately changing the person.
But even in that case, Aurora, I wonder, because are we saying that a surgeon who was able to make that change would remove from existence, but not only from existence, but from the memory of existence, that person's existence?
Perhaps it is not important what all of humanity and all of the universe remembers. Perhaps it is only important what that person remembers. So a surgeon who alters the mind of a serial killer and makes that serial killer no longer wish to harm another human, that serial killer is perhaps a new person now.
And the old person is erased.
To himself, yes.
I like, there are things I like about it, Aurora, and things that make me afraid, because that means that on the one hand, who among us has not committed some action that he has regret for?
But I mean, like if you take a case of, like an extreme case of for two very, very, very rich individuals. One of them work hard to be rich, and the other person commit a crime to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I'm not sure, but the person who work hard for whatever his fortune, he feel his feeling toward life is completely different than the other person.
Mm-hmm. But then, caller, if the person's memory was erased, the knowledge that they had ever performed a crime, I feel as though, and I wonder all of you what you think, that the money also remembers. Is it possible?
I can definitely see that happening. Memory can be built into the stones of a house. Or into the ground, even. Absorbed.
I think that the money itself is a representative kind of quantity, but the possessions, on the other hand, are more likely to take of their own accord some feelings.
Yeah.
So that, but that implies, Zoro, that although, you know, so I was thinking that that if I stole from Aurora a jewel and then later exchanged the jewel for a large collection of watermelons and berries, that would the watermelons have the same sense as the jewel, that they had been acquired by...
I think that the jewel in this instance would be quite offended.
The jewel may be offended, but I actually believe that the memory would be transferred from the jewel to the berries.
But why you are thinking about the money or the... It's the person himself or you, if you commit... It's a crime, so...
So
if you...
If then my memory were erased, would then the berries become completely wholesome? I think no. I think that the berries themselves, they have in them the memory of the theft in the berry. Or at least I wonder if this is possible.
No, I don't see it in the berry. I see it in the person. And that's why... the transition between this life and the second life is scary, because some of us, we are scared about our action in this life and how we are going to reward it.
And Aurora, what is your opinion here on the berry versus the brain? This is, I think, a very, very simple way to phrase this ancient question. The berry or the brain?
Let me answer in a broader sense, using a specific example. When you purchase meats from a farm, perhaps, from a farm where the chickens were incredibly crowded and not well nourished, you can taste the crime in the meat. But when you taste meat that was free, that reigned in the forest, for example, or ran in the great fields, it tastes free. It tastes delicious and exquisite. And you can taste the freedom in the meat. And the same is true of the berries. You can taste how the berries... And perhaps the difference here is that the berries must be growing and changing while this is occurring. If you pull berries off of the vine and then commit heinous acts, the berries themselves die before that time, so it is not so apparent in the taste. Mm-hmm. You must look at other sensations. You must look at chemical traces, for example, mm-hmm. or you must meditate with the berries on your nose.
Carcinogens.
Yes, that sort of thing.
Licking. Zorro, the brain or the berry?
I think that this is a more subtle issue, perhaps, than you are letting on. There are many things to consider. Perhaps we take another example. You may imagine that you find on the side of the road a bicycle, and it is not attached to anything. And being a person of good moral standing, you decide that being that it is not your bike, you will not take it and use it. But on your way home, you encounter the bike again, but you are being chased by perhaps some entity who is malicious. And so you take the bike in fear. But it is not yours, and you have contemplated this fact beforehand. So I think that there are situations in which the object, even though you have contemplated the correctness of your action and decided one way, it may become apparent in the future, with respect to the changes that have occurred, that a new course of action should be okay.
But now, see, Zorro, the issue is that you make is that the intention is what is stored in the brain or the berry. But still, is it in the brain or in the berry?
Well, it seems clear to me that in this sort of situation, the bicycle should understand what is happening as well.
So, Paula...
Can it not be in both the brain and the berry?
So it seems that we
and
have...
And why in the brain? I mean, it could be anywhere in the body. It could be in the heart.
In the heart, so the berry or the body?
Or the body, anywhere.
So I think we have now 3 votes for berry and 2 for body. If anyone is listening and they would like to put in their own vote, the number is 617-253-8810. Berry or body?
Perhaps you misunderstand us. I will not speak for the others, but I believe I have said that the memory remains in both.
Yes.
And in every cell in your body.
It was a vote for both. Let's bring a call in to take a vote here. Caller 2, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you.
So is it berry or body, caller?
Well, I think that a berry is something very sensual. So I like to imagine that my wife has a berry.
Mm-hmm. And also, presumably, you have a berry.
2 berries meeting at the crossroad.
Well, I think we all have berries. There are mental berries. But no, let's return to the question, which is the memory in the berry or the body?
A collective berry.
So a single universal berry.
A juicy berry.
See, I'm not sure also I believe in the objective berry theory that the caller proposes. Aurora.
does it matter if the berry is objective or not?
I think that it does. I think that it is possible to consider that there is not a difference between the memory and the berry, which is to say that the physical manifestations are a record of the events which they have gone through.
So the berry is the memory.
Is the body.
And it's also the body. The pan-berry belief system that Zoro proposes. Aurora.
Honestly, I'm just thinking of jam at the moment. Does jam contain the memories of all of the horrific and wonderful things that have occurred to the individual berries, or is this memory lost in the preservation process?
I think aspects of it are lost, but also, see, I'm not sure, but it might be that there is some cruelty about the act of preservation itself, and that certainly, I believe, would be stored there in the berry preserve.
Well, if you think of a purely physical sense, you are smashing the berries and grinding them into a fine paste. But if you think of it in a broader sense, you are allowing the berries to enjoy a great unity with one another. So, and is this not what we all strive to experience?
To reunite into a single glorious whole.
See, I think...
Or a glorious jam.
In my present state of mind, I might consider that the jam as a product of the berries really is the suffering and the experiences of the berries, and that when you enjoy the jam, you are consuming those experiences, and that you are taking in all of those feelings into a part of your own being and your own feelings and mindset.
So the act of consumption is a critical one.
But I believe that one who is good and well-hearted deep within themselves, by consuming berries which have been acquired illegally, not by themselves but by another, they are removing from the universe some evil. They are doing good by consuming the evil berries.
The consumption, the removal of the evil berry. Caller, are you still with us?
Yes.
So this is another vote, and I'd like to take your opinion on the universal berry theory here, the objective berry.
Are you talking to me or the other caller?
No, to you, caller.
And I still feel that the body is where everything starts. So I'm not going to go with you guys about the berry. I think...
Well, caller, about the berry in the body theory.
The berry, when it is in the body, it becomes part of the body.
This I agree with.
Yeah.
If anyone else would like to join, again, 617-253-8810, the question, berry or body? Or berry in the body, or universal berry, that is also the body.
I think perhaps the question we would like to answer is the following. What are these things? The berry, the body, the universe?
All important questions. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to weigh in on the debate.
Please.
And I think that the berry is always a product of the body. I think that when you're trying to understand both the body and the berry in terms of memory, you have to see that the berry is a type of archival production mechanism of the body. And in every age, the body produces the best berry that is most representative of it at any given time. Those berries then go on to become the memory, the monument, and the things that people can revisit in order to understand what that body was at any given point in time. So I think that we're seeing more of a utilitarian view about the berry as the body produces it for its own reproduction.
Caller, I love this image. This is, we may call it, the recorded berry, the historical book berry.
Blackberry, I think, as people are calling it now, but bookberry is a good way of calling it, I think.
Bookberry. And in this way, in a very real way, our feelings, our emotions and attitudes are recorded for our children to either inspire and to guide them or to destroy them utterly and damage them in an irreversible way.
I would totally agree with you, except for that last part about the irreversibility. You see, the thing about a berry is that in many cases it is also a seed. The idea of creating something so delicious that you must ingest it upon immediate encountering of it is in order to draw that ingester into the process of the reproduction of the thing that produced the berry in the first place.
Carlo, so, what a beautiful image.
No, I see that now. I agree, caller. The idea that that even the damage of the previous generation may be reversed through natural growth.
And the idea, I think, that which we consume is really a message from that which gave it to us.
I think giving birth in general, is painful and it is damaging, but it is required and it really is beneficial to the future generation.
And it's up to that generation, ultimately, if they want to eat that berry and enjoy it as simply a matter of degustation, or if they want to see that berry as something that they can either plant directly into their tropical soils or something that they can ingest and see what happens to memory in the future without them knowing exactly where it would go and fertilize.
I think I understand the metaphor which you are approaching.
I believe that, you know, with fear of losing this metaphor, I believe that ingesting the berry is something that every generation must go through, that every generation must ingest the berry, and this ingestive process allows the seeds to reach a point of maturation which allows the next berry tree to grow.
So if I were to refuse the berry of previous generations, it would prevent that berry from maturing. I am the vessel in which the berry would mature.
Perhaps envision that you encounter the berry and you deliberately take out the seed before you consume it.
This is fascinating. Here we have a seed bank, a berry seed bank. You can selectively dispose of that seed inside of that berry, or you can preserve it for future generations. Because I think it's not unrealistic to imagine a point in time when we can genetically engineer bodies so that they don't need berries or don't need seeds. But what if in that future of genetically modified bodies without berries or seeds, we would want to see what our past was like? We would need that berry and the seeds contained within it in order to play back our past and understand from where we came.
We would be like a fluff of sheep's wool flying through the wind with no roots to keep us down.
But this image, because, caller, you bring to my mind the thought that at one point I was a member of an isolated village which, in all likelihood, in the same metaphor, created a single berry. But in this future time, we are all connected. We are all nurturing a single earth berry, which is large and growing. And the seeds is a resulting contribution of all of us. Are there many seeds in this berry?
Perhaps the berry contains seeds which, from a distance, seem identical. But as you zoom in closer and closer, you begin to taste the differences.
The idea of multiple seeds, it seems vaguely sinister to me.
Perhaps that is the music.
I think that it represents, in a sense, the chance that may happen of the future. There may be many courses which it shall take, and it is not possible for us to know from the start which one will propagate into being. And so this collection of seeds and the fact that there are many, they look slightly different when you zoom in, it is a reflection of the different possibilities which may occur eventually.
Precisely, and that is exactly it. Because if we do not have those seeds, we can never stop the progression of a particular branch of this bush and then go back and see what would have happened if we had planted a different seed and gone in a different direction. And I do need to go, but I wanted to thank you all and just say, let's not forget that our inner ecologists are asking us the question, what is the footprint of this particular berry? If this berry is an extraterrestrial berry, what is its carbon footprint? We need to recognize that any fruits that we produce have certain costs associated with them, and I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming and joining our show.
Thank you, Paula. I love the fact that we had this call, because I sometimes feel as though I am standing on a box declaring my beliefs, but often, and it occurs so often, but perhaps not so clearly as tonight, I am the one that is learning the most. Caller one, are you still with us? I think you have.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I have another point or another question. So if the berry had a seed, and then this seed will, I mean, like we consume the berry, and then the seed will leave our body one way or the other. And then we get other berries due to this seed. And this berry will be consumed by another human being.
Entirely so possible. That's right, because
that's
really
a huge possibility. So what's going to happen?
Well, the partially digested berry will be consumed again. And caller, I think you point out that there are two exit paths for the seed.
Yeah.
And one of them leads to fuller digestion, the other to partial digestion, which I think corresponds to partial maturity, the embryonic birth and the full birth. And which is the more painful?
Yeah. It's very interesting, and really I enjoy the program a lot, and thank you. And I hope that I can come again and talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, caller. Thank you very much for joining us and listening, and also for speaking.
Bye-bye.
There goes our caller. If you'd like to join in, we now have two lines open, 617-253-8810. And the question now, how many seeds are in that berry?
The number 12 jumps out at me mysteriously.
Well, this is quite a possibility. The number 12 is very significant. It is many factors as well as many numbers which you may combine in other methods to create it. And so it serves somewhat as the central point on a wheel. You know that there are 12 months of the year, and correspondingly so the 12 zodiac signs. And so, as of course, it is the number 12 which jumps out at us most frequently.
Closely related to the number 12 and sharing many of its properties is the number 13.
Actually, though I do not wish to contradict you directly, in my professional experience, I would say that the number 12 and the number 13 are somewhat different. So if you consider the historical roles of these numbers, you will find that there is some superstitions which surround the number 13. At least in the Western societies. And this property is not so simple for the number 12. It is more highly regarded as such.
Well, I think the most important difference is that the number 13, of course, I yield to your knowledge as a professional numerologist, but 13 is what is known as a Fibonacci number, whereas 12 is not. So it's much more likely to appear in a fruit.
Yes, there is this relationship, I believe, between the spirals, the exponentials, which are radiating outwards in some kind of a fractal pattern. But from the numerological number theory aspects, the 13 is less common and is more unfamiliar to the numbers around it. And this is what causes it to be prime.
And I've always wondered why it is that factors and multiples are so much more important to numerologists than other properties may be.
Then other properties, perhaps an example you will give?
Well, you see, I'm merely a vocal therapist. I don't know terribly much about numbers, but it always seems as though factors are always mentioned.
Well, this aspect of the numbers is one of the ones which is most apparent to us. The basic operations which we usually consider are the addition, the subtraction, the multiplication, and the division. And the most basic, straightforward analysis is the one which will yield the most poignant results. And as such, this is why you hear them considered so directly. The other relationships which you may form, they are more subtle, and so the interpretation of the results is less influential, therefore.
Well, so one thing I used to do as a child is, when I was learning the numbers, I would write them down, and I would look at them, and I instantly understood my feeling towards these numbers based on how they looked. The number one always seemed to me a jovial sort of lackadaisical young man, whereas two was a snide young woman, and so on and so forth. I remember particularly four looking very sinister to me, and I later learned that in some cultures four means death.
Yes, I think that there is an intuitive understanding of these numbers which we have passed from generation to generation to reference the previous conversation, the berries. I think that this memory of the berry, the numbers flowing through the berries to us, imprints upon our mind the consideration of all the things which the number may represent. And this is why historically this thought of the number corresponds to what we believe today the meaning of the number is.
I love this image too, of the number's value, properties being given by the results of these basic operations. When I was a youth, I remember thinking of each number in terms of the largest fruit for which I could consume, I could place in my mouth at the same time that number of that fruit. So for one, a peach, or for three, an apricot, for 17, a mulberry, and for 8, a grape. And all of these flavors mix in my mind when I think of the numbers.
Yes, there are many associations which people carry with the numbers, and I think that their meaning can actually be individual. And so it is not true that numbers may be interpreted on a universal level, but I think that there are trends upon the interpretations to society. That is to say, there are broad spectrum interpretations of the numbers which are mostly applicable to the majority of us.
And 71 was rice.
Despite it not being a berry.
It's true, I made these measurements with all sorts of foods.
And I wonder, if you choose rice, is the number 71 still?
At this time, well, I'm not sure. I try not to count it anymore because it takes too long.
Perhaps you are too consumed by your hunger.
Generally, I think, yes.
You know, at the age of 20, I actually did measure the volume of my mouth in grapes. And it was 23 grapes, I believe. Although my mouth hurt a lot.
I found that with practice, I could not make a significant difference in the number of this or that fruit.
Actually, this is why I asked the question about the number of rice, because it seems to me that the difference between the rice which is not your mouth and the rice which is the entirety is so small.
6 was okra.
You know, I once had a friend who would have 2 apples within his mouth, who would hold them there for hours every day in order to acquaint himself with the feeling, with the fullness of his mouth and the shape of his cheeks.
Like the Edam. I do wonder how many bananas at this point I could stick in my mouth all at the same time.
Peeled or not peeled?
Let us say peeled.
I think that the standard measurement should be of the peeled banana. It is most often consumed in that, right? Is that not so?
I believe if you process the banana into a mush, it would be far easier to place in your mouth.
So 1/2, I also learned later about fractions. And 1/2 is, of course, the coconut.
Did you remove the outside of the coconut?
Of course, of course.
I see.
And 1/10 was a watermelon.
See, this is another situation when I am wondering if the number may fluctuate, or if perhaps your mouth may fluctuate such that it is always 1/10 of the watermelon.
It may be. I also, I think this concept of multiplication came to me with the concept of a berry, so a grape that is made of apricots. So then the grape is 7, I believe. Apricots are 2. And so if you took each apricot and divided it into grapes, then you would have the number 14. Apricot grapes.
See, this is a very lovely way to teach an intuitive understanding of multiplication, which is something that does not come easy to us all.
And I think that the modern child not having apricots maybe would experiment with M&Ms or with Snickers bars and Big Macs.
Yes, the tools of the day, I think I understand.
Precisely. This concept can be placed in the modern context easily.
And yet what a tragic notion.
I am sorry, perhaps I do not understand the tragedy.
The tragedy of the absence of apricots, of course.
Oh, this of course, you are quite correct.
Now, Doctor, I have noticed this cough of yours for the past several weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize also to the listeners for whom it must be agony hearing my cough. And I assure you, it hurts you more than me. It is really merely the result. I recently was experimenting with a bag of sunflower seeds, and needless to say, I think that there is still one there somewhere.
That is quite unfortunate. I am very, very sorry.
Well, I think we have just time for one final caller before we must go. Caller, marhaban.
Hello, doctor.
Welcome.
Yes, I just wanted to prescribe to you a berry-flavored NyQuil. When drinking enough of this NyQuil, you start to be feeling very, very floaty.
Very flowy.
Floaty.
Floaty. And then the result of the floaty.
Like you're hovering above your bed.
like one who is flying.
Snoring? Flying, yes.
Flying or airplane-y.
Yes, but it must be the berry flavor.
Berry flavor. Thank you, caller, for this.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it has been a challenging time dealing with this very unusual respiratory affliction.
Yes, I know that it has been quite challenging for me as well. It is quite abrupt. As I might notice, it appears we have come to the abrupt ending.
Yes, Zoro, unfortunately, our times, like the berries, they must end gradually. Let's take our time and really say goodbye with feeling. Please, each of you, Aurora first, then Zoro, or the other way.
To say goodbye with feeling.
Tell us about the fruits and the numbers, briefly.
There are so many ways to go about this.
Perhaps I will go first, and then afterwards you may express.
Now tell me an estimate of the number of tomatoes that you believe...
Two.
...you could put in your hand simultaneously and then in your mouth. Zoro.
I do not believe in such precision.
No, I need your immediate feeling.
Then I will answer to as well.
The soul speaks quickly. Aurora?
I have already given my answer.
Well, unfortunately, they were cherry tomatoes.
And I have very small palms.
Perhaps you have overestimated the extent of my jaws.
Well, both of you small-jawed mystical gurus, thank you for joining me this evening.
And with feeling, goodbye.
Thank you as well to all the listeners out there.
I am Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. We are looking forward to the brain, to the body, and the berry with many seeds and greetings. Ma'a salama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Yes, this is WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. I am DS Turner filling in. Yes, we got about a half hour. We're going to play some classics, you know, some raw hip-hop until 8:30 comes along when we got Terra Voice. We doing it big. I'm your host, Musonomics, but let's go with some old stuff.
The fat funk, your whack junk. It's pathetic, I'll break you off a crack dunk. So your skull, cause the tomahawk is raised up and stays up. Peace pipes around me get blazed up. I gazed up and think it's the mighty funk dopeiest. Taking out your parts cause your songs are the moodiest. So pack up, I stack up, pornos, I mac up. Hoes, the tribal take funk as my backup. We crack up, crows like bros, punk your lows. Fuck you in a sofa, pace to the old school. Boogie bank it down, check, come on. Mugs, can I get that one funky drum on? The porno king needs his swing to let him know his thing. So tell him where it's at. Where's it at, y'all? 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 Where's it at?
The rumble and thunder gave birth to the one that they call craze. Now I'm blown with the funk and it's flame. Hey yo, Papa squatting, watch this new nigga rocket. I raise flames and maintain to keep a deep pocket. With the kill skills, I'll be hitting up your chin pump. Like Air Jordan, yo, I'm ready to do the slam dunk. And niggas be scheming on me in my car, but I don't sweat it, I got to go, go catch it, radar. It's craze, one blacking, I smoke blunts, that rock rhymes. I do what I do, in the prime time. I kick it real good with the skills that I could. Representing the motherfucker. Hood. MCs get flamed on, I'm the match to the paper. It's another desert dweller, straight from Jamaica.
Where's that show? Where's that show?